Hey guys, this is Naomi. I'm just warning you that on the second part of the podcast, I pressed one of the wrong buttons on my Zoom, so the audio is going to sound a little different. I'm sorry, and this will never happen again. Well, I mean, it will probably happen again, but forgive me. Welcome back to Cargo Cult.
Welcome home.
We got a lot for you today on the show.
I'm excited for this episode.
Yeah, me too. Truth Social. I can't say Truth Social. Truth Social. So you may have heard that Truth Social still exists, and Trump has been posting on it. Do they call them truths on
they
Truth
do.
Social?
I hate to be the one to tell you this. Tweets are truths, and retweets are retruths.
Oh, that's so cute. That's adorable.
So Truth Social, if you don't know, is basically the Trump version of Twitter. And Trump Media is the parent org of Truth Social.
Going on Truth Social would be so hard for me because, like, the idea of truthing something or putting out a truth,
yeah,
the burden would weigh so heavy on me. I would never, ever use it. And a lot of companies have tried to compete with Twitter, Blue Sky, and all that, Mastodon, and none of those things caught on.
Oof, I mean, the name Mastodon,
yeah, I remember all the tweets, like, I'm hot and young, I can't be on Mastodon.
Oh, really? That's funny. So, just last week, Truth Social effectively went public. It's now trading on the NASDAQ. The ticker symbol is...
TDD?
It's DJT.
DJT, yeah.
Naomi didn't read any of the articles I sent.
Yeah, I read it. I said D.
You didn't buy any shares, clearly.
I didn't do my homework and buy the meme stock.
So yeah, and Trump has a big stake in this. He has 79 million shares. And so there's been a lot of, this is a pretty mainstream story, a lot of news around how high this stock's price has risen over the last few days.
Trump Media and Technology Group, the parent company of Truth Social, will begin trading tomorrow on the NASDAQ.
More breaking news tonight involving Donald Trump. His media company, which of course includes Truth Social, soaring in its first day of trading on NASDAQ, surging 56% at one point during trading to $78 a share before closing at $58.
Trump now owns 60% of the new Trump Media Company, a stake that is on paper at this hour worth $4.6 billion.
The higher the stock goes, the higher that Donald Trump's net worth is.
And everyone is asking the question, is Trump going to be able to monetize this, right? Because again, he has 79 million shares. But I mean, first of all, he technically can't right now. The major shareholders can't sell for 6 months. This is like a normal thing. I mean, in this case, it just doesn't send the right message, right? He's the face of the company. His initials are on the ticker. It's going to make other people sell their shares if he starts selling. But also, it doesn't really matter. If he really wanted to tap into that money, like if he really needed it desperately, which I don't think he does, he could tap into that money by using the shares as collateral and monetizing them that way.
I think what's going around in a lot of like the lib media is they're like, ooh, there's this case in New York where the Trump estate lied about the value of their assets. And they're like, well, perhaps the New York judge will seize some of those assets. And this is what people are getting really excited about because Trump has been able to like slip out of every court case nearly unscathed. But then Trump becomes a stock and it freaks out the liberal media even more, and they're like, oh no, you can cash out at any minute.
Right, but they also just hate to see a king win in general.
Yeah.
You know, like they hate to see that, you know, his supporters, which, you know, make up a very loyal fan base, are all buying the stock basically as a way to support him, right? Them buying the shares is not because, just like GameStop, it's not because people are buying the shares because of some future prediction about how the GameStop business or about how the Truth Social business is going to perform, right? In the case of GameStop, people bought the shares to screw over the people who shorted the stock. And in the case of Trump Media, which is the parent company of Truth Social now, they want to pump the stock up to these ridiculously high levels to make a point.
This is not investment advice, by the way.
I mean, if you're getting investment advice from this podcast, you deserve to lose your money. That's weird. I mean, first of all, we're women.
Yeah.
We don't even understand the stock market.
I did make some money on the meme stock, stuff.
Yeah.
I got like a grand. It was fun to gamble during the pandemic.
Are you net up in all of your stock experience?
Yeah.
Nice.
Maybe not. I did like play around on Robinhood a little bit and maybe like lost like $100, nothing. I know. I would never like put a real amount of money on something.
No, that's stupid without knowing what you're doing. Totally. Yeah. Okay, so let's give the Truth Social backstory. So yeah. January 6th, the Democratic Party's 9/11.
Yeah.
In the aftermath of that revolution, Trump gets kicked off
or
of Twitter.
Tour around the Capitol.
Trump gets kicked off of Twitter.
He gets kicked off of nearly every platform.
But Twitter's definitely the one that stings the most, right?
Yeah, he was a star poster, had, you know, some of my favorites when he talked about the senator having his nipples showing up.
What?
Nipples tweet. Barney Franked look disgusting. Nipples protruding in his blue short before Congress. Very, very disrespectful.
So these two guys, Andy Latinsky and Wes Moss from The Apprentice, pitch him on this idea of a new social media company. They're like, hey, you won't be censored and you will make money. And he's like, sick. If you guys get this done, I'll be there, but I'm not gonna be the one to get it done for you.
Yeah, he's not totally on board in the beginning. He's like, interesting. He basically doesn't provide any investment to it. He just like kind of gives a thumbs up. You can use my name, say I'll be on the platform, but doesn't give any sort of monetary commitment.
Because they wanted to raise mad money, right? They needed investors, right? And they couldn't just actually start a business from the ground up and make money over time.
Gotta raise money to make money in this economy.
So they decide to go the SPAC route, basically a special purpose acquisition company. Basically, it's also known as like a blank check company. Basically, you create this entity whose entire purpose is to acquire another business, like an operating business, which is why it's called a blank check company. So they basically need to go off and find a SPAC that's already raised money, because they know that if they try to raise money as Truth Social, it's not going to be that fruitful because the haters and losers in Wall Street don't want to back Trump. So they need to go off and find a SPAC that's already raised money. They look and they end up finding one called Digital World Acquisition Corporation. So the SPAC is called DWAC. DWAC. So DWAC goes public in 2021. A month later, they merge with Trump Media. That was the whole purpose, right? They found DWAC in order to merge with Trump Media. There was like kind of questions about like how kosher this was. The SEC opened an investigation into how this deal came together to basically see if DWAC violated securities laws by talking about the merger before that IPO. And they find out that basically they did. Here's a quote from the SEC press release. The Securities and Exchange Commission today announced settled fraud charges against DWAC, a special purpose acquisition company, SPAC, for making material misrepresentations in forms filed with the SEC as part of DWAC's initial public offering and proposed merger with Trump Media. DWAC misled investors and the SEC by failing to disclose that it had formulated a plan to acquire and was pursuing the acquisition of Trump Media prior to DWAC's IPO. So they have to pay $18 million for that. So at this point, when the SEC settles those fraud charges, Truth Social has already launched, but it's just a few million users. You know, they launched in 2022, and it's kind of unclear if they're going to ever start becoming profitable, right? Trump wasn't really posting on it, right? But they do now have this green light from the SEC to move forward with the merger. And so then Trump starts becoming more active on Truth Social.
Yeah, he's also like tweeting or truthing through the whole when they raid Mar-a-Lago for the supposedly classified documents that became totally nothing.
Oh yeah.
And then they were like, oh, actually Biden is doing it too, whoops. So that was his outlet when he was decrying the injustice of being raided by the FBI.
Yeah, which is like kind of good, like leave it over there. But I also do think it's really dystopian that the country is like divided into different like siloed social media platforms.
Yeah, these guys are just like selling a little echo chamber. They're like, you know what's missing? A right-wing one.
Is it even fun for them?
Well, it's definitely a market for them.
No. I mean, is it fun for the truthers? It's just the regular users, because I feel like a big part of social media is like getting angry at posts that you disagree with.
But just getting along compared to like the left on Twitter fighting all the time. Like people just make fun of pronouns. Like my pronouns are the Holy Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. You know, like that's what they must be doing at each other all day long.
I wonder what the right wing infighting is. Everyone listening to this knows what the left wing infighting is.
It's Israel.
Oh, it's Israel.
Yeah.
True. Because it's like, what will win out? Your colonialism or your anti-Semitism? Like there are two wolves within you.
Evangelical Christian and there's the isolationist, blind faith to Israel versus America first.
Yeah, I guess their version of the Sino-Soviet split was like Ben Shapiro, Candace Owens.
Wow, I wonder what that must have been a day on Truth Social. Those truths.
So, okay, so anyway, so all of that is basically to explain that when we say Trump Media went public last week, what we really mean is that Trump Media merged with DWAC last week, right? And so the whole process of this like merger has been really interesting to kind of look into. This has been like a major community that's been growing over the last few months, like rooting for and sometimes even praying for the merger. So you saw mainstream reporting talking about how last week Truth Social was like full of these truths urging Trump supporters to buy the DJT stock, right, to trigger the libs. But this movement, this like Trump meme stock movement, has been really growing for a while. In fact, I found an amazing Rumble channel that I'm so excited to share with you, Naomi.
No.
I'm so excited. And you know, is this punching down a little bit? Maybe. I mean, he's not like ultimately like a super powerful guy. He's just kind of an influencer with a Rumble channel.
Let's punch down. Let's see it. It's called Rumble. That's where you, the gym where you punch down.
Okay.
You punch down, you punch up, you punch all around.
This was my first time on Rumble. Hold up. We got to sit through this ad. Okay. I guess we're
actually. Are you tired
of
buying a new pair of glasses each time?
Here we go. So he defends the idea of being a Christian nationalist and then segues right into that prayer.
You have this group of radical Satanist globalists that are calling us Christian nationalists as an insult. I think it's an awesome term. I love being a Christian nationalist. And yes, to any leftists or reporters watching this, I'm a Christian nationalist.
That's us.
Go cry about it. It doesn't really bother me.
Okay. So he's going to now do a prayer for the merger to go through.
For anyone who's ever been called a Christian nationalist, own it with pride. Let's have some prayer and move on. Father in heaven, Lord, we pray tonight for Trump as he fights these ridiculous court cases. You said as Christians, we'd be dragged into court. Trump is that, Lord. We pray that you strengthen him through. We pray for the, God, for the DWAC executives as they finish. Lord, we pray for the TMTG guys who are trying to build a company.
He just blessed the stock market. This is so scary. Wait, so who is this guy? Chad Nedoheen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He does also have some music out, if you guys want to check that out. He doesn't have a bad singing voice. Like, that's not the funny part about him. The funny part about him is that he's
a Christian stock influencer.
Just an example of, like, how their main issue has become, like, I hope that Trump Media and DWAC can merge successfully. So this particular stream was in February when DWAC and Trump Media announced the successful filing of the S-4 form.
Party. Father in heaven, thank you for all the wisdom that you gave to the TMTG folks and the DWAC folks, and that you made this possible for all of this, the shareholders, for Trump, for free speech, for America, for the world. Who knows? Maybe we'll actually get a party out of this, and maybe even the man himself will show up. But whoever shows up, it's going
to
be a party.
So desperately wants to be invited to Mar-a-Lago.
I know we're spending a lot of time on this guy, but like, you got to hear this one belt.
How the world.
I hate this guy so much.
We are the champions. That's it.
While he's reading the press release from DWAC.
I wish I believed in something so much.
I know. It's actually kind of beautiful. There's also a funny moment where, like, he's reading chats and someone says something in the chat and he's like, thank you, brother or sister. I'm not sure which one you are, but there are only two genders.
Man, he's getting in all the bullet points. There are two genders. Praise the shareholders.
Lord, we pray for everybody here tonight that this grace would be on them, that you would, your grace, Father, in the name of Jesus, would be on the DWAC executives as they finish. For the TMTG guys, for Northwell and his team, that you would bless them for everything they've done. For Devin and that and the executive team, that you would bless them for everything they're doing to fight for the merger. And for President Trump, we pray that you deliver him and give him strength. And Lord, we pray for Truth Social to grow.
Okay, that's enough of that.
They truly believe that he is like this messianic figure, getting rid of all the evil in the world. And all of these forces are conspired against him, which that part actually is rooted in truth. And so it creates this like moral crusade around the Trump movement. Obviously, it's really funny that that guy is like praying for this merger. But like what led up to the point that would allow people to, with a straight face, with no sense of irony, say the words, I'm praying for the executives at DWAC and at Trump Media.
Yeah, and the shareholders.
Yeah, like people genuinely believe that this is like a struggle between the light and the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that was my first time on Rumble. I don't know if I'll be back.
Not gonna go back.
Even just the UI is like really overwhelming. So like, is this a meme stock? Well, a meme stock is basically shares in companies where the underlying business fails to justify this surge in price. So yes, this is obviously a meme stock. This was actually called the mother of all meme stocks, which is of course ironic because Trump dropped the mother of all bombs on Afghanistan in 2017.
It was a big, beautiful bomb.
Yeah. It's really the massive ordnance air blast, MOAB. It's the largest bomb besides the nuke. It like detonates above ground. And so anyone within like 300 meters gets vaporized. And when the Trump administration dropped this, it had a lasting effect on the area. Residents were saying that the plants were dry, the trees were dry, about 45 houses nearby were destroyed. I mean, the government did evacuate people before the Trump administration dropped the bomb, but when those people came back, their houses were destroyed. Plus, what else? I feel like I've heard more stuff. Oh yeah, the skin stuff. Plus, kids were reporting suffering from skin irritation after the explosion. It affected pregnant women and newborn babies, and there was also like impacts on lung health and whatever. It's like truly horrific. Like Afghanistan was like really a testing ground for, you know, all these like U.S. military like toys,
which now Israel can be using.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, back to the meme stock idea. So the meme stock trades on not on fundamentals, but on emotion, right? So the stock takes on a life of its own. Their shares run up to ridiculous levels. The people are buying the stock as a way to support him, right? To stick it to the Democrats, the media, the establishment, or whoever they think Trump is fighting.
But the company, on the other hand, is like failing, right? It's like they barely have any ad dollars on it. They barely have any users. They have a couple million users who are just having the best time of their lives, you know, being crazy aunties.
Right. So despite the current valuation of more than $8 billion, right, the actual fundamentals, like we said, aren't there to back it up. But I mean, you're saying it's failing, but what do you consider success? Like this is the big prank of the stock market, right? Stocks don't need to trade on fundamentals. The whole system is fucking disconnected from like actual value, right? Our stock market is disconnected from the underlying economy. I mean, it's also funny because like Reddit was like that big social media IPO that everyone was anticipating, including us. We did a whole episode leading up to it. But then Trump Media like totally stole Reddit's thunder, because Reddit jumped 48% on the first day, which is like very successful. But then Trump Media jumped 59% on the first day of trading last week. But anyway, a lot of the corporate press is talking about Trump's meme stock right now, right? This business is unprofitable, but the valuation of the company is so high. It's fake. It doesn't make sense, right? The stock price shouldn't be that high. It's wrong. But like, this is the nature of our stock market. And it's funny because the New York Times did a podcast episode and the host of the podcast like asked the question like, this doesn't really make sense. What does that tell you about Trump? And it's like, ooh, so close. Actually, the question is, what does that tell you about capitalism?
And the system.
I want to step way back for just a minute and think about the larger meaning of what has happened with Truth Social.
But he doesn't step far back enough. He only steps far enough to see Trump.
It really strikes me that of all the businesses he's been in, this in some ways feels like the least sound business of all. And yet it has made him the richest by far. That's a little bit weird to wrap your head around. What does that tell you about
what? sometimes.
The nature of Trump and these investors who believe in this.
So close.
Trump is holding a mirror up to the truth of our civilization. He's showing us our truth.
It's like, no, New York Times, like, that's the stock market, baby. Like, exchange value, divorce from use value. Like, everything is fake. The Richard Wolff also, like, you know, was probably the first person to, or let me back up, because not everyone's online. Marxist economist Professor Richard Wolff, and founder of Democracy at Work, I think is his org's name, was the first to make me think about this kind of thing when I was in college. Like, I watched a lot of his lectures. And in preparation for this episode, I was like, oh, maybe I can find like a good soundbite of him, like, you know, kind of explaining how the stock market is like rigged against the masses of people, because obviously he's talked about that millions of times.
Not another video of a Christian influencer. We're not watching more of that. It can only take so many prayers to shareholders.
This is the opposite. This is Richard Wolff, but like, for whatever reason, this video happened to be in his like Newsies cap era. I don't want to laugh at him. I love him so much. And he once gave me a compliment on the air. And I thought to myself, like, I can die happy. I could die right now. Because when I was in college, his lectures on YouTube, like, helped me understand a lot. And I think he's done that for a lot of young people, like, been their gateway into Marxism. So nothing but respect to him. Seriously, one of the most important thought leaders of our time. That said, his Newsies cap era is one of the funniest things that's ever happened.
Oh, yeah.
This is Richard Wolff from Democracy at Work.
I think
Work.
It's cute.
How rigged is the stock market against working people?
Like, I can't take it seriously.
First of all, about 10% of our people own 80% of the stocks. So in point of fact, the vast majority of Americans are either without any participation in the stock market.
I didn't see anything wrong with that. I think that's the height of fashion for a Marxist. You're lucky you're getting a hat.
Okay, he makes the point that in the stock market, like, the vast majority of people are without meaningful participation, right? It's like a playground for the top 10%, right? But the other point he makes there is that, like, every major corporation will, like, keep two sets of books.
Companies know what they're doing. That's different from what they announce publicly in the SEC forms they have to fill out, in the documents they have to make public. So there's a gap, I'm being as polite as I know how, between the reality of a company and what it says publicly in its documents. Then there's a second gap between what you and I know and what you can learn if you're a full-time professional studying all the documents they have to fill out for all the different state and federal and local agencies, and you visit the company and you ask questions. So most of us, the vast majority, are two gaps away from the reality. It is, to be blunt, a crapshoot. It's a casino. And you may have noticed that in the casino, the house always wins in the end. The Wall Street is no different.
Like, just because they are disclosing things does not necessarily mean that that's the truth. But anyway, I love Dick Wolf. Sorry I made fun of your hat. But anyway, to sum up this story.
About Truth Social?
No, about the hat. Let's do more on the hat. To sum up this story, what Trump did and what his supporters did is fully allowed within our fake-ass stock market. These people didn't do anything illegal.
It's also like anything could be a tech company. You just have an idea and you can get funding and you don't have to show anything real.
So that's point number one. Point number two, these people aren't actually threats to anyone, though. Like, this group of Trump supporters, they're not threatening the underlying economic system at all, right? They're not threats to the ruling class, threats to the powerful. They're really not threats to anybody. I mean, they're threats to the children in their neighborhood, probably. But, like, they're not.
Just the sex offenders registry matched the users of Truth Social.
Dear Lord, please allow the sex offender registry to stop spreading fake news on my name.
On the other hand, I could totally imagine that there's, like, some witches in Bushwick who, like, when Elon Musk took over Twitter, like, prayed he wouldn't destroy the site and hollow it out like he is.
Totally.
And they're, like, you know, sacrificing chickens.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about my friends.
Yeah. You were doing Twitter voodoo. If you're a witch, let us know who we should pray to bring back Twitter to its original state. We'd love to go viral on there again. So like a lot of lib tard media, they're raising the alarms. They're saying like, oh, this meme stock, it's not just all fun and games. It means like foreign actors could purchase large amounts of stocks and have influence over Trump. And so they're trying to sell us the same story repackaged, like every time Trump has some kind of investment that could have foreign investment. Oh no, you know, what Russian oligarch is going to buy all this meme stock? But like you said, it's like going to be really hard for him to access that money because then it'll just collapse the stock completely.
I mean, like if he really wanted to, I'm sure the board would let him pull it out. Like right now, there's a 6-month freeze on all the major investors, which obviously includes him. But like, let's think about who the board is. We have Cash App Patel, which like he was the former, I mean, his headshot is fucking wild, dude. Look at that. I mean, I know this is a podcast and no one else will see this, but just for you, please brace yourself.
Uh-oh.
Aww.
It looks like
he was the chief of staff to the Secretary of Defense.
Cash. It looks like a mugshot. It looks like he just got a DUI. He killed an entire family. And then they held up a camera to him and he's like, oh no.
Yeah, it's like giving deer in the headlight. We can make fun of this guy because he was the chief of staff to the acting Secretary of Defense in the Trump administration. So at the very best, complicit in the murder of people. But anyway, now he's on Trump's board. Who else is on the board? We have Linda McMahon. I mean, let's get this out of the way. Donald Trump Jr. is on the board.
So obviously.
He'll vote for whatever daddy wants.
It's a family enterprise.
We have Linda McMahon, who was the administrator of the U.S. Small Business Administration under Trump. We also have the U.S. Trade Representative during the Trump administration, you know, was involved in endless trade wars.
So there's a bunch of Trump guys on the board is what you're saying. So if he needed the board's approval to withdraw money,
he could, but there's no need to. And it makes more sense for him to keep his shares because he wants to make more money in the long run by letting the stock continue to rise. What's the stock price right now? As of recording on Sunday,
16,211. Wow, that's a lot of money.
I don't understand.
Yeah,
how many dollars a share?
How many dollars is 16,000 a share?
No fucking way.
That's what it's saying.
I don't think it's 16. Let's find out.
Oh no, that's Dow Jones Transportation Average. 66.
It's 66. Okay, so as of recording, it's in the 60s. So, okay, let's do the math. Trump has 79 million shares, right?
Yeah, 78 million, I see here.
Okay, so he has 78. That's probably 78 and change. So let's just do the low end. 78 million times 60. Okay, if he cash out right now, he would have $4.6 billion. Good. But anyway, yeah, this is not him doing anything crazy. This is him being a good businessman under our stupid system, right? Anyway, that's enough on that story. Okay, I can't believe I have to do this like breaking news addendum thing 2 weeks in a row, but his stake is no longer worth $4.6 billion. It's now worth about $3.8 billion. Obviously still a lot of money, but the stock is coming down a little bit from its initial high. The company disclosed that it lost more than $58 million and generated very little revenue in 2023 this afternoon. After that news, shares of Trump Media tumbled 21% today. Today being Monday night right now. You guys are going to hear this Tuesday. But they're still up overall. And Trump's 78.8 million shares are worth $3.8 billion. So, you know, less than what we said. So I just wanted to give that updated information. But also, like, who cares? Question mark. Anyway, you guys are going to listen to this tomorrow. So if it's back up, I don't know. It's Hero Robo Dog in the news this week.
Quote, robot dog company celebrates its first shooting. We are relieved that the only casualty that day was our robot. And via Reuters, robotic police dog shot multiple times, credited with avoiding potential bloodshed. So there was a standoff with police in the sleepy town of Barnstable, Massachusetts, on Cape Cod. Justin Moreira, kind of a kooky guy. He threatened to shoot up a school in May of 2022, and then he was due for a court date. And he decided, I don't want to go to court. And instead, he held up a knife to his mother and demanded that he be given access to her gun locker. Then his family calls the cops. And then there's a 7-hour standoff with the police. He shoots at the squat car. He shoots at an above ground pool, which is kind of funny. If you, the downside of having an above ground pool, if you're in the middle of crossfire, no longer a pool, just kind of an empty cylinder. During the standoff, the cops decide to send in the robo dogs. The dogs were chasing him up the stairs, and he shot one of them 3 times, and it was incapacitated, though it was able to get up, but wasn't really working that much. Eventually, Justin was brought in because they threw tear gas into his house. And so I'm not sure if the robot dogs actually helped the operation that much. I guess you could say that they got intel, which is probably what they're used more often for.
Yeah, I've seen photos of like it post shooting. And it just looks like an old vacuum that you've had for like 10 years. Like the metal is chipping a little, the paint is like falling off in places. But yeah, this story is definitely being used as good PR for the company because it's the first time that one of these Boston Dynamics robot dogs took a bullet.
Feel good story. Spot has been shot.
It's like a children's book.
Yeah. Kindergarten classic. Spot has been shot.
Who shot Spot? Next page. Was it the cop?
Spot has been shot in Cape Cod. Cape Cod?
Stupid. I mean, I do find it funny that the guy first tried to knock the dog over. The dog, listen to me, the robot over. And then the dog got back up. So he was like, all right, you did this to yourself. Now I'm going to have to shoot you 3 times. Yeah. But yeah, Massachusetts State Police spokesman Dave Procopio.
We're just warming up our mouths right now. It's good.
Procopio. Said in a statement that the robot, quote, may have prevented a police officer from being involved in an exchange of gunfire. So I guess we should talk about this company, Boston Dynamics. I think everyone has probably seen like some of the viral videos of these robots in passing, but Boston Dynamics is owned by Hyundai. They acquired it for $921 million in 2020, and that deal valued the firm at $1.1 billion. You may have seen a really early viral video of it opening a door with its arm in 2018. That got like tens of millions of views and like really broke the internet when it happened. Or more recently, you may have seen that at the Capernaum fashion show, the runway featured some of these robot dogs.
Like, what were they wearing?
They were naked, but there were like actual fashion models walking along. Capernaum always does stunts like this. Like you may remember the season prior, Capernaum did like that spray on dress on Bella Hadid.
Oh, yeah, I did love that.
Yeah, it was beautiful. I mean, the brand really likes to include technology a lot. The Guardian even wrote in 2023 that Capernaum is a brand like obsessed with technology.
I must have watched that video of the dress like 1,000 times, just like, where's the nipple?
I mean, shout out to Bella Hadid. She's like one of our only like A-lister Palestinians. The other thing I saw about Bella Hadid, wow, today actually on TikTok, I don't know if this is a new story or if it was just on my feed, but like she was talking about how she got a nose job and she regrets it. And that she got the nose job at 14. And I'm like, oh my God, that's fucked up of her parents for like letting her do that at 14. Like you can't blame her, the 14-year-old, for wanting to look different when like so much media and like probably also the adults she was meeting in the industry were like signaling that she was ugly. It's like, you can't blame her, but like, why did her mom let her do that? Like, that's fucked up. Because, you know, she's Palestinian, right? She had like an Arab nose. But the quote I saw of her today was that she wishes she kept the nose of her ancestors and that she probably would have grown into it.
And she probably wouldn't have all those modeling contracts. So we wouldn't even know who she was. So well done, plastic surgeon. Shout out to
well done, Euro beauty standards. Not racist at all. Anyway, so you probably saw that viral moment of her with the spray-on dress at Capernaum Spring Summer 2023. But the viral moment for this season featured none other than Spot from Boston Dynamics. So you had like one of the robot dogs like carrying a model's bag for her. So they were like interacting with the models, right? One robot helped a model take off her coat. And this is like really an example of Boston Dynamics' effort to have these robots be perceived as harmless, you know, living with humans in harmony.
We're in a symbiotic relationship with these robots.
So this robot dog is called Spot. There's also some more. There's Stretch, there's Atlas, and we're going to be talking about all of those.
We're going to get into it, get into all the robots.
And Spot specifically is for sale. I mean, Spot first became available for purchase in 2020. This was the first time the company made any of its robots for sale. And they announced that the price was $74,500.
So who is behind this company? Who are Boston Dynamics? Who are the brains?
Yeah, so now it's Hyundai that owns it. They bought it in 2020, but for a while, they were independent. I mean, in the beginning, they were really a research project. They were really a research organization for like the first 20 years. But then they were bought by Google in 2013. Then they were bought by SoftBank in 2017. And then they were bought by Hyundai in 2020, which is currently still their owner. So I guess, yeah, let's talk about the origins of this company, right?
I have a feeling DARPA's involved. Michelle's excited.
So Boston Dynamics, like we just said, started as a research organization. It was basically an outgrowth of MIT's Leg Lab, started by this guy named Mark. Mark seems like a normal guy.
Unlike a lot of tech CEOs, he didn't drop out of college. He had a PhD.
Yeah. He was a professor for many years. He really wanted to figure out how to get like a robot moving like a human. So the first step to that was to get a robot hopping. You know, a lot of work obviously went into that. You have to like kind of calculate where the foot needs to come down to keep things stable. And that has to happen fast, like before it falls and hits the ground, right? You have to calculate like momentum, trajectory, and all of that.
Yeah, we got the pogo stick going. That was the first step. They were like, we are slowly putting together a circus.
You know, the simple story is that there's three things going on. There's something making it bounce. And, you know, we had a system that was estimating how high the robot was off the ground. And using that, you know, there's energy that can be in three places in a pogo stick. One is in the spring, one is in the altitude, and the other is in the velocity. And so when at the top of the hop, it's all in the height. And so you could just measure how high you're going, and thereby have an idea of a lot about the cycle, and you could decide whether to put more energy in or less. So that is one element. Then there's a part that you decide where to put the foot. And if you think when you're landing on the ground with respect to the center of mass, so if you think of a pole vaulter, the key thing the pole vaulter has to do is get its body to the right place when the pole gets stuck. If they're too far forward, they kind of get thrown backwards. If they're too far back, they go, you know, over. And what they need to do is get it so that they go mostly up to get over the thing. And, you know, high jumpers is the same kind of thing. So there's a calculation about where to put the foot. And we did something, you know, relatively simple. And then there's a third part to keep the body at an attitude that's upright. Because if it gets too far, you know, you could hop and just keep rotating around. But if it gets too far, then you run out of motion of the joints at the hips. So you have to do that. And we did that by applying a torque between the legs and the body every time the foot's on the ground. You only can do it while the foot's on the ground. Mm-hmm. In the air, you know, the physics don't work out.
MIT's Leg Lab was basically all about, I mean, as you might imagine, building robots with legs to get around, which may sound simple, but is actually really hard. If you think about like vehicles, like that's all with wheels, right? That's relatively simple implementation when compared to like building legs. Wheeled robots are like pretty cheap to develop. They're stable on their own. It doesn't require any cutting edge tech, especially if you want to do like a four-wheeled robot. Like that's very stable, right? But wheels, of course, are not ideal across, I don't know, different types of terrain. Also like stairs.
Yeah, following the perpetrator up the stairs becomes
whoops, okay.
Problem.
Yeah, and also like debris and sand can get caught in your wheels. But legs are obviously very hard to design. You have to figure out joints. You have to figure out like kind of different ways to simulate muscles. You need really good programming. So a lot of the early work was about like, how the fuck do we make legs? In 1983, he built a one-legged hopping machine, which looks like a robot on a pogo stick, basically. So the first step was to get something hopping. He did that. Then he built the first quadruped robot in 1984, which is a very funny year for that to be happening. Notably, as an article by The Verge put it, quote, Boston Dynamics' early development was thanks almost entirely to U.S. military funding, right? What kind of U.S. military funding? We're, of course, talking about the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, which was basically the research wing of the Pentagon, which has come up in many episodes. If you ever binge the show, I've said it before and I'll say it again, take a shot whenever we say DARPA.
I went to the shop and with my own hands kind of made a first model, which didn't work and was just, you know, a beginning shot at it. And Ivan and I took that to Washington. And in those days, you could just walk into DARPA and walk down the hallway and see who's there. And we found Craig Fields in his office. Craig later became the director of DARPA, but in those days, he was a program manager. And so we went in. I had a little Samsonite suitcase, which we opened, and it had just the skeleton of this one-legged hopping robot. And we showed it to him. And you could almost see the drool going down his chin.
So he was excited.
Of excitement. And he sent me $250,000. He said, okay. I want to fund this.
DARPA basically, that agency was basically created by the Eisenhower administration as a response to the Soviet Union launching Sputnik, right? Because the Soviets got something into space first, for the first time. And so they developed what was originally called ARPA, Advanced Research Project Agency, the Eisenhower administration, basically as a response to that in 1957. And it was designed to focus primarily on like space stuff. The different thing about, you know, ARPA, which then became DARPA in 1972, which then actually went back to ARPA in 1993 and then went back to DARPA in 1996. But what's different about that agency was that they weren't going to be like other military research that already existed. They were going to contract most of this work out to private companies. So the point was, this is going to be a small government agency. We're going to farm all that work out. It's going to be very lean, right? It's not going to be like armed services, which is like, you know, bureaucracy and things take time and blah, blah, blah. This is going to be like the U.S. military funding research, but the private sector is going to get it done because they can just get it done without all the quote unquote red tape, right? Whatever. We'll do a big DARPA episode one day.
Yeah, you may know them. They develop all kinds of things like neuro weapons. They develop those insects that spread disease.
And also notably, DARPA was responsible for the creation of the internet, which that is a big episode coming soon. But the key point here is that Boston Dynamics early development was funded almost entirely by DARPA funding, by funding from the U.S. military. The U.S. Army thought that it could use these large robots, for example, as pack mules to like carry their equipment for them so that troops wouldn't have to carry their own equipment.
Yeah, like a little mini tank. A yeah. little mini, well, really a Sherpa?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, a motorized Sherpa. But, I mean, they really want the Terminator super soldier. That's what they want.
I think this is, like, a theme that we see in a lot of military or government-funded research that turns into technology used by private corporations. The military wants these military tools, but the company itself also has to turn their own profit. And so these companies have commercial lines, even though they were created for this military technology. The military technology is not the only thing that they produce because they also want to be rich.
Well, I mean, if they can make a product that is so useful to the armed services, that's the best contract that any company could get. But the problem with such experimental science and technology is that you can't really convince somebody that it has an application in combat. You'll be liable if something goes wrong. They've been having an easier time finding commercial applications for robots rather than the military ones.
Yeah, it's like, you know how we say the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice or truth? Or Truth Social. What is it? The moral arc of the universe.
It bends towards Truth Social.
We can say the moral arc of robotics technology is long, but it bends towards murderous killer robots. But on the way, it does other stuff too.
So today we're talking about killer robots, but we're also talking about job killer robots. Let's talk about those a little bit first. So one of the robots that Boston Dynamics makes is named Stretch, and they call this a versatile case handling robot. Stretch has been hailed as the future of warehouse automation, and you could see how this would really be a popular and almost blockbuster product, right? Because there are many companies out there that would love nothing more than to have robots do what people are currently doing in the warehouse, because I don't know, for one thing, they don't need breaks. They don't need benefits.
Really, every CEO's wet dream is to replace all the labor it has with robots and ChatGPT.
So Stretch was actually developed through a 4-year collaboration between DHL and Boston Dynamics. And so DHL, I'm sure most people know, it's like FedEx, it's like UPS, it's a package delivery and mail service, one of, you know, the giants in this industry. And as employees of DHL, quote unquote employees, the Stretch robots, quote, take packages from the back of trailers and place them on a flexible conveyor. Here's a quote from the DHL website. Quote, unloading boxes is a strenuous, physically demanding work process, which can impact an associate's ability to work efficiently. By automating this process, DHL supply chain not only addresses safety concerns, but also the ongoing labor supply challenge by redirecting skilled labor to focus on value-add strategic tasks. The speed at which Stretch can unload cases varies by product. However, in all tested environments, the case unload speed exceeded the manual approach, aka the human approach.
And I think the thing to keep in mind when you look at these robots are like 3 times the size of somebody who's working in that warehouse. So this can only lead to more worker injuries. So in 2020, a new story broke that Amazon warehouse robots increased staff injuries. There was a warehouse that was like evacuated once because one of the robots released bear spray in the warehouse, which is so funny. It's like, did he know? Did the robot know?
Wait, what's bear spray?
Bear spray, it's like really high powered tear gas. It's like,
oh my God,
pepper spray. Also, in South Korea, a worker was crushed to death by one of these box loading machines because the robot supposedly thought this man was a box of vegetables. So very tragic accident.
Yeah, okay. So that's Stretch, the, you know, future of warehouse automation robot, the job killer robot. And there are some other job killer robots, like there's one called Flippy that flips burgers. There's one called, I swear to God, Sippy.
He drinks your drinks for you. He's the AA mentor robot.
Fast food jobs are demanding and sometimes even dangerous, but not for robots.
The machines can look at more things faster in greater detail. They never get bored. They don't need breaks.
Flippy can cook everything from French fries and onion rings to cheese sticks. Flippy Light is currently being tested in restaurants by Chipotle.
And what Flippy Light is designed to do is to take one item that requires frying and just cook the heck out of it all day long.
As well as a drinks dispenser named Sippy.
It's just a drink dispenser. Okay, wait. So Flippy and Sippy are both robots by this other company, Miso Robotics. It's just an example of these other job killer robots.
But do we care that they're taking those jobs? Do we care that much?
That's a complicated question, because I think advanced robotics, like other forms of, you know, radical technical progress, will inevitably bring up this issue of automation, right? Is it good or is it bad? The boss can choose to fire all of their workers and replace them with robots, or they can choose to use the gains in productivity that you get from robots to give people more free time. These are all decisions that are made by people. These aren't just like baked into the technology of a robot. Automation is really only a bad phenomenon under capitalism. And actually, maybe we should look to Richard Wolff again for guidance, because like, instead of me saying my opinion, like, let's get this credentialed ass guy to do it.
Are you going to lose your mind over his hat again?
Well, maybe he can redeem himself for the Newsies cap here.
I think there's going to be a lot of jobs just like maintaining these robots.
Here's what Richard Wolff says. I just found a good... The thing is, like, I haven't even read this yet, but I know his talking point on automation. And so I know what he's going to say, because he, I think, is
super effective as like this mainstream like Marxist figure because he does only have like 10 or 20 talking points. And I think that's actually really effective strategically. Anyway, quote, automation is an easily and readily solved problem. Think of it this way. Imagine a technical change that enables 50 workers to do in a day what before required 100 workers. For simplicity, assume further that all wages and non-labor costs were the same and that the output quantity and price were likewise the same, i.e. unchanged, right? Okay, for argument's sake. Two alternative possibilities present themselves in this example. For profit, the employer will typically fire 50 workers and install a technical change. His profit rises because he has cut his labor cost in half. The alternative that serves the workers instead of profit would be for all 100 workers to keep their jobs, but work exactly half the hours per day that they did before. Their wages wouldn't change, nor would their employer's profit. The technical change would have delivered leisure to the workers without reducing their incomes. If automation were managed for the workers, i.e. a socialist approach, one might say, it would be welcomed, not resisted by them, and would benefit more and more needy people than what raised profits do. And you know, when you can boil down concepts like that, concepts capitalist industry, media, and academia have intentionally overcomplicated and like kind of brainwashed people into thinking are so complicated that only quote unquote experts could possibly comprehend them. When you can boil that stuff down into plain language, you deserve to wear any hat you want. Yeah. You know, so automation has like, you know, garnered headlines a lot in the last like 5 to 10 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
UBI often gets brought up as a solution. There was this Guardian piece late last year, quote, AI is coming for our jobs. Could UBI be the solution? That's just one headline as an example, but there are many think pieces like this, right? Andrew Yang proposed that the US government give every adult monthly $1,000 quote unquote freedom dividend. That was basically his UBI proposal. But is the idea of giving people money in a vacuum bad necessarily? No, right? Is the idea of people not having to work to survive, they can have more time for friendship, parenting, art, love, you know, caring for your parents, like all that in a vacuum is obviously good, right? So that's the basic idea behind UBI. It's like we're fixing the wealth gap. But within the context of us here now today in the United States of America, right? What would that actually look like? Well, for one thing, it would be digital, and that means that that money is not necessarily going to be without strings attached, such as monitoring what you spend your money on. And also, we've seen a lot of proposals in the last 5 years talking about controlling what you can and can't spend that money on, right? You had Sam Altman's like WorldCoin, which launched last year. That's a project to basically create this like global ID system, scanning your eyeballs. And that's basically like the foundation.
Your eyeball is your wallet.
And that's like the infrastructure, like the foundation to distribute like all of these different financial services, including universal basic income, right? And WorldCoin has raised a ton of money. And the leadership literally just wants to establish digital IDs for all these people. And, you know, they, of course, say this is like, you know, to prevent fraud and blah, blah, blah. But like, shut the fuck up.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, that's my really deep analysis. I mean, we can also look at this paper that the Tony Blair Institute put out last year called A Proposal for Web3-Based Universal Basic Income. It says, quote, as digital transaction networks such as public blockchains and CBDC networks grow to become part of the core financial infrastructure in the global economy, they can be the ideal tool for implementing UBI programs efficiently on a national scale. So we may want to start to look at UBI as a way of ushering in these CBDCs as the Trojan horse. Free money, who's going to say no to that, right? Sounds good. It's a great way to get people to buy into this digital surveillance system because that, in effect, is what it will be. It's a bribe, basically. It's economic coercion. Anyway.
So, yeah, we were talking about automation and then we went on the UBI thing.
So that's Stretch, the automation robot.
That's Stretch. The implications for UBI. This robot was just moving boxes, Michelle.
I'm like, he's ushering in a new era of digital. Okay, so now let's talk about Atlas, the humanoid robot that Boston Dynamics has. Atlas is 5 feet tall. Atlas is 190 pounds. He's the ideal man, really.
Yeah.
He's battery powered. He's got these RGB cameras, these depth sensors, and he's also got all the computation required to control him. I really should stop saying him. It. All the computation that's needed to control the robot and to do like the perception, all of that computation happens on the robot. And this is the world's most advanced humanoid robot. It's mastered walking, running, jumping, backflips. You may have seen videos of this robot doing parkour, dancing, and it's also getting better at picking stuff up. At first, they gave it these like hand clamps where you could see videos of it like carrying planks of wood and like a toolbox that way, and like the clamp hands had like a single pivot at the palm and seemed to just apply like the maximum grip strength to everything. Like it was destroying the wood plank in that video.
So imagine what it would do to its colleague.
But they gave Atlas new hands. The new hands look a bit more, I guess you could say, like delicate. Each one now has three fingers with two joints, and the fingers share, I guess, like one big pivot point at the palm of the hand. And there's also a knuckle joint halfway up the finger. So they're continuously improving these products, right?
Atlas, for some reason, doesn't scare me as much as Spot.
Well, Spot has more use cases right now. Atlas isn't like out in the world.
Really, yeah, Atlas, you know, is like a toy right now.
It's still in development. It's got two legs. So, you know, this is the one they really have to nail. Would you like to see it do parkour, dance, jump, or carry wood?
Carry wood.
Okay.
I forgot my tools again.
The acting. All right, so that's a human construction worker on like a scaffold. He goes, ugh, I forgot my tools again. So here comes Atlas to help him out. He picks up a plank of wood. He jumps for no reason. And now he's going to climb this. Oh, there he goes. Got the toolbox. Oh. And he pushes the box off the scaffold. Now he's going to jump onto the box. Great. He's actually really good at jumping. There he goes.
Whoa. Okay. Show off. Doing a little flip for no reason.
Okay. We talked about Flippy and Sippy as like other, you know, job killer robots, like in comparison to Stretch. When we're talking about Atlas, the obvious comparison to bring up is Tesla's robot, which is the Optimus, right? Both Atlas and Optimus like have similar like white and black bodies, and they, you know, two legs, two arms, they're humanoids. Recently it came out that Elon Musk said that Tesla's Optimus robot will cost, quote, less than half of a car. Quote, Elon Musk says Optimus, Tesla's general purpose humanoid robot, should cost, quote, less than half the price of a car. The new prototype showed a lot of improvements compared to previously underwhelming versions of the robot, and it gave some credibility to the project, which was laughed off by many when first announced with a dancer disguised as a robot for visual aid a few years ago. That was the silliest thing.
Yeah.
Elon Musk also went as far as, quote, confidently predicting that Optimus will account for a majority of Tesla's long-term value. So, yeah, of course he delivered that in a tweet, or a truth, rather. It is also funny how, like, Trump has Truth Social because, like, when Elon Musk bought Twitter, he, like, invited Trump back, and Trump was like, no, I got my own thing now.
A snub. Yeah, Musk was like, please, please come back.
So that's Atlas, the humanoid robot. Now let's talk about the dog.
The dog. This is what you're all waiting for.
Yeah, because the dog is the one that's really out in the world. It has many jobs. This is the Boston Dynamics robot that you can actually see out in the wild. First of all, this is really tough for me to talk about because I love dogs, as any perfunctory inspection of my Instagram will attest. But I don't love this one.
In the video of some of the like promotional materials for the RoboDog, it like they have him walking next to a soldier. Like they try to make the dog seem like it's a companion. Like, it's not a scary robot. It sits and stands just like your dog at home.
Yeah, it's like roughly the size of a golden retriever. It's 70 pounds. It stands about 2 feet tall. So it's like Boston Dynamics like purposely made it kind of smaller because they didn't want it to feel physically intimidating. They say like, oh, you know, this dog can fall on you. It's like no big deal, you know? Unlike the earlier iteration of their quadruped robot, which was designed for the U.S. military and funded by the U.S. military, again through DARPA, which was called Big Dog. In 2013, there was a video of Big Dog
basically like throwing around a 35-pound cinder block, throwing it 17 feet. I mean, to me, big dog is like really giving cow. It's really big. Yeah. It's not a dog at all.
You're giving bison right now. It was like a mini tank, kind of. Could go on terrain that, you know, could climb up things and stuff. But what they discovered was that it was too loud for combat. So it was just like you can hear this hulking machinery come through.
I mean, you got to say that Big Dog was, you know, sort of put us on the map and got our heads really pulled together. We scaled up the company. Big Dog was the result of Alan Rudolph at DARPA starting a biodynautics program. And he put out a, you know, a request for proposals. And I think there were 42 proposals written and three got funded. One was Big Dog. One was a climbing robot, Rise. And, you know, that put things in motion. You could take it out in the woods.
Yeah, and you did.
We did. We spent a lot of time down at the Marine Corps base in Quantico where there was a trail called the Guadalcanal Trail. And our milestone that DARPA had specified was that we could go on this one particular trail that involved, you know, a lot of challenge. It was designed to carry 400, but we had it carrying about 1,000 pounds one time.
Of course you did.
But the video of that, of Big Dog like picking up a 35-pound cinder block and throwing it 17 feet is actually pretty impressive from a technical perspective.
I'm impressed. I'm impressed to know to get the fuck away from it.
Yeah. To have an arm throw something, you need to like kind of get the whole body involved in those mechanics. Like it's not just about the ability of the hand to grasp something, to pick up something. So it is, you know, it is impressive animatronics from a pure tech perspective. The products of this company are really cool. Like learning about how legs move, how to simulate human and animal movement. This is all super exciting and cool. Like I imagine the people working on these robots are some of the happiest workers out there. But it just sucks because it's hard to examine this technological, I don't know, I guess I'll use the fucking capitalist shill word, innovation, without thinking of, I don't know, for example, the Department of Homeland Security, right? So Spot's designed to be either remote controlled or fully autonomous. It can climb stairs, it can open doors, right? Like we said, there was that viral video of it opening a door in 2018. It can be, you know, customized in different ways. So it can be customized to detect carbon monoxide, and you can add like different sensors or microphones or even cameras to it, right? So, I mean, at the very, very base level, you got to think about this as like roving surveillance machines, right? Again, the research for this dog was, of course, done by Boston Dynamics with funding from DARPA. And what's interesting about Spot is that it's capable, you know, unlike wheeled robots, of making its way across varied terrain. It can maintain its balance in all these different types of conditions like ice and snow. So let's take a look at all the different jobs that Spot has. Okay, so here's Spot at Anheuser-Busch. It is...
Can you not do that?
Naomi's yelling at her boyfriend. that owns all of the beers, right? It is the parent company of Bud Light, Stella, Michael's. Oh my god, I can't even go to their website without putting my...
And you're not old enough.
We have the ambition to become carbon neutral in 2028. To go there, we need to better understand our consumption points of electricity, of gas, of steam, of pressurized air, and so on. And Spot can help understand better the data of consumption, but also the losses we face actually in our production.
Quote, Spot conducts 1,800 individual inspections each week across 10 packaging lines that churn over 50,000 containers of Stella Artois, Budweiser, and Corona beer every hour. In the first 6 months of deployment, Spot discovered nearly 150 anomalies and slashed average repair times from a few months to 13 days. So blah, 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 efficiency, blah, 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 automation, blah, 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 increased profits. Okay, let's take a look at what Spot's doing at BP. He's helping on an oil rig.
He's on an oil rig. Another kindergarten banger. See Spot, drill oil.
Several hours a day, several operators will walk the facility, read gauges, listen for noise that doesn't sound right. What we're doing with Spot is really trying to replicate that observation piece so that I don't need necessarily an operator to go do that.
All right, so Spot is replacing operators on oil rigs. Who else is Spot replacing? We actually should do the children's book. I feel like that would be fun. Whose job is Spot taking today? Here's Spot working at National Grid.
Our number one priority is keeping employees safe. Boston Dynamics Spot Robot helps us do just that. The Spot Robot allows us to have a closer eye on things and a very repeatable view of our equipment. It has a pan, tilt, zoom optical camera that allows us to zoom in up to 30 times on any of our assets and gauges that we need to see. It also has a thermal IR camera, which produces thermal imagery of what it's seeing, allowing us to look for any hot spots.
So he's basically a giant walking camera. Here's another job that Spot has with Turner Construction.
Spot is an agile robot that navigates terrain with unprecedented mobility and has the capacity to facilitate surveillance, data capture, and job site documentation.
All right, so that's just some of the jobs that Spot has, right? You guys can kind of see the theme. They're collecting data with cameras, sensors.
Yeah, see Spot work. See Spot spy on the other workers.
Yeah. But of course, the most controversial job that Spot has is the police officer role that he recently obtained. So you may have heard that in 2020, the New York City Police Department started using Spot, and they deployed him a couple times. And when they began leasing Spot from Boston Dynamics, they said, quote, this dog is going to save lives, protect people, and protect officers. But organizers were like, no, this is the unnecessary militarization of police, kind of the exact opposite of like what we've been asking for. You know, this is a quintessential example of wasteful police spending.
Because each dog is like $75,000, right? It's like as much as a car.
And also, then Derek Chauvin murdered George Floyd in May of that year. And so I think that climate probably helped contribute to the NYPD basically shutting that down.
Yeah, police couldn't have their toys. They got their toys taken away. Oh, no. But then Eric Adams is like, the digi dogs are back.
Uh-oh, back again.
Do I need to talk?
You do.
I think the commissioner, she always never ceases to amaze me and her clear articulation on what we need to move our police department forward. And, you know, I've stated this from day one, even when I was on the campaign trail, I'm a computer geek. And I believe that technology is here. We cannot be afraid of it. And the two pilots that we are rolling out today to see how they fit in our public safety environment is matched with the Digi Dog, a robotic dog that could be used to save lives. It was something that was introduced previously under the previous administration.
Mm-hmm.
And a few loud people were opposed to it, and we took a step back. That is not how I operate.
No.
That's not how I operate. I actually don't care what the people think. Thank you very much.
We are looking at the new forms of public safety.
Enough of that, bozo.
Yeah, it's worth mentioning that Eric Adams has been... I mean, this has been pointed out by, you know, he was on that podcast, The Breakfast Club, but he has been exaggerating the level of crime that happens. Of course, there are incidents on the subway and you may have heard of them, but like compared to other metro areas, New York City is very, very safe. So he's been hyping up the crime threat and he's been using this to kind of digitize everything.
So yeah, so... that was the announcement by Eric Adams in April of last year. And they basically said that, you know, don't worry, these dogs are going to be like patrolling the streets by themselves. They're only going to be deployed in specific instances where the danger for humans is high, right? Basically like bomb squad robots that the NYPD already uses.
Yeah, it's still in its experimental phase.
And like when you do have these things roaming, everyone should know that there are cameras and sensors. Don't do anything you wouldn't want a cop to see.
In August of 2023, there was like another standoff between police and just a kooky guy. I'm not trying to undermine how kooky these guys are. This guy was like walking from hotel room to hotel room with a machete.
Free him, frankly.
He's just trying to party. And when the police came, they let loose one of their trusty servants.
their best friend, Spot. And on video, you can see the naked man pulling the police robot into his hotel room. And doing what with it? We don't know.
It's just dumb because the police were probably like, sick, thanks for the look inside your room. Like, thanks for the situational awareness.
Yeah, but in the video, you could see like the robot looks like he's like trying to crawl away as he's being dragged into the...
No, wait, no, I shouldn't say aw. I can't have empathy for this thing. It's not living. Yeah, I mean, like, the use of this robot by the police obviously brings up interesting questions, right? So this group of robotics companies, including Boston Dynamics, in fact, they always brag about how they were, like, the first to sign this pledge not to weaponize their robots in 2022. Here's a quote from that pledge. "We pledge that we will not weaponize our advanced mobility general purpose robots or the software we develop that enables advanced robotics, and we will not support others to do so." So there's two points I want to make here. One is that it's a very narrow definition of weaponized that they're using. And so that robot dog that is working with NYPD, is that robot dog carrying a machine gun and shooting people? No, but it's still working with the police. And so that's number one, which is that, you know, even though you could say, oh, it's just reconnaissance, like with Spot and the NYPD, it's just reconnaissance. You're still part of that NYPD machine, right? It's like saying you're a reconnaissance Marine, so I'm not killing anyone.
You're just locating the people to kill.
Exactly. You're still part of the military, right? The Spot is still helping the police do their job better, right? The pledge to not weaponize doesn't take issue with, you know, use in these institutions, right? So that pledge leaves open the possibility of these machines like Spot to be used for, you know, surveillance, reconnaissance alongside the military abroad or the police at home. So basically what I'm trying to say is this pledge means nothing and should mean nothing to you. That's point number one. And point number two is that there are many robotics companies that have not signed the pledge.
Yeah. Ghost Robotics being one of them. Like you may have seen that Ghost Robotics strapped a machine gun to its robot.
Yeah, and the Ghost Robotics robot, like their quadruped robot, like looks pretty much exactly like Spot. But the difference is that this company focuses on military and government sales, like only. Their bots are being tested by the U.S. Space Force right now. They're being tested by the U.S. Air Force right now to patrol bases. And they're also in use by the Department of Homeland Security to patrol, of course, the U.S. border with Mexico. Ghost Robotics, they're working with all these federal agencies. They're basically like, you know, we're not going to restrict what our customers do. You know, those customers being the U.S. government and allied governments.
And IDF, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Here's a quote from the company's CEO, quote, "Because we're selling to the military, we don't know what they do with them. We're not going to dictate to our government customers how they use the robots." So that's Ghost Robotics. Like, Ghost Robotics very clearly, it's the one that's military focused, right? In fact, like, Boston Dynamics has been called like robotics commercial golden boy, but Ghost Robotics is like the military golden boy, right? They, like we mentioned, supply robots to the federal government and to U.S. allies. In fact, a few hundred of the company's Vision 60 robots are already in use by the Pentagon for conducting perimeter security checks at Air Force bases and by law enforcement agencies. And these robots, as you might expect, because they're like the military version, cost more than the Boston Dynamic robots. So each robot costs $165,000 and can function in almost any terrain, including rocks, sand, hills, ice, snow, and staircases. And they can operate in temperatures of -40 to 130 degrees Fahrenheit. According to Ghost Robotics, they can also operate for over 6 miles on just one charge and at speeds of up to 6 miles per hour. The device also, you know, like the Boston Dynamics DigiDog, has multiple cameras and microphones built in and can interface with infrared cameras. So a lot of surveillance capabilities here.
That's also important to mention that these aren't the first robots that police have been using. They've been working with robots for a long time. In Dallas in 2016, there was a shooter who had shot like 5 police officers and killed them. And, well, shot over 20 people and killed 5 people. And what the police officers did, they took the robot, this Northrop Grumman robot, which is used usually to disactivate bombs. They strapped a bomb to that robot and just let it loose on the shooter and killed the shooter. And so this was like hailed as a successful operation. But there's a lot of robots who are just like jerry-rigged to have a weapon on it. Like whether or not there's a pledge signed really doesn't affect the US military or the police. We have to imagine that this capability is in the hands of people who don't have the best intentions. And these robots could be really useful, like if they could go into a burning building, if they could, you know, go into a place where there's poisonous gas, like places where humans would normally be, you know, under threat. And they would be really good for rescue operations.
The campaign that they just did recently is basically like an ad for Spot for first responders, right? Spot is going to allow first responders to stay out of harm's way and like get the information that they need to do their job, right? So again, it's like a reconnaissance vibe. And like with the fire department, like, great, like what's the downside? Like Spot should be the first to arrive on the scene and I guess like assess the situation, like assuming that it's not like a waste of time and like people aren't dying in the building while Spot's like getting all the data.
I mean, that's the other problem is like you do have all these like cowardly police officers, or maybe not the fire department as much, but like when there's like a mass shooting, there's always those cases of police officers who are like hiding. During the Vegas shooting, there was like actual footage. You could just like see this guy like almost piss his pants. Now they're just going to be like, oh, well, why don't we just send in a robot and see if it could get that 2-year-old safely out of the building, you know? So these are really like high stakes situations that these robots are being sent into. It's not a great place to experiment.
Agreed. And then we talked about how like, there's Ghost Robotics and these other companies that haven't signed this like no weaponization pledge. But even like within the realm of Boston Dynamics itself, because it is like the, I don't know, like the Google of this industry right now, we got to talk about the idea of like mission creep, right? And, you know, if you work in marketing like me, you know all about this, am I right? But basically, like once these tools or these dogs or whatever are in the police department, it's just going to happen that the roles are going to expand. And once Boston Dynamics has a relationship with, for example, the NYPD, we know how these government contracts work. That relationship is just going to grow over time. It's going to balloon over time.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a quote from undark.org. Quote, "It's crucial to establish guardrails when implementing new surveillance technologies because there's a tendency to mission creep," said Nicole Turner-Lee, a sociologist who researches the intersections of technology, race, and policy at the Brookings Institution. Ugh, we don't like Brookings, but okay, let's let this fucking sociologist make this point.
There's some good stuff coming out of there. Can't dismiss a whole outlet.
Yeah, I'm sure they, yeah, fine. Like, I'll let this sociologist speak, but like, overall, Brookings is like hawkish neocons, pro-war losers with ties to weapons contractors. Their donors include like the US military, Lockheed Martin, which is a major military weaponry manufacturer, and then just like, you know, big banks like Bank of America, Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan Chase, and then like the Brookings Institute people are like foreign policy experts, and it's like, are we
so
objective?
So what's the quote, Michelle?
Okay. "There is a propensity to improve those technologies for greater accuracy. And in the criminal justice system, greater accuracy can almost always amount to higher levels of incarceration."
You're like, the machine said this guy was guilty.
Yeah, it's like, what's going on with the carceral state right now? Like, what's going on with the way the NYPD operates? Like, is that something you want to amplify and intensify?
Exactly. Boston Dynamics, the maker of nightmares, really inspired a good Black Mirror episode that's called Metalhead. If you don't want spoilers and want to go watch it, don't listen to the next part. This woman is like looking to help her friend, and she goes into a warehouse and reaches for a box, and behind the box, there's one of these robo dogs, and it leaps out, shoots her companions and her with tracking devices, and Whoa. Then starts following them out. And then she like runs away, the robot kills her companions. It is really a terrifying episode. It is one of the better Black Mirror episodes, I think. She's like trying to kill this thing in a million ways. She first figures out that she has a tracking device after she tries hiding from the robo dog a bunch of times. And then she like, you know, takes a knife to her leg and takes out the tracking device. And then she tries to throw paint on it. She tries to shoot it. Eventually she gets the robo dog like in a car that then she drives off the cliff, but then she stays on the cliff. You know, it's like kind of cartoonish how many ways she tries to kill the dog. And then it like has a damaged leg, so she climbs up a tree and the dog can't climb up the tree because its leg is damaged. And so she tries to drain it of its battery by throwing things at the dog over and over again. And then it finally like powers down and it's like in the sitting position. Now it's out of battery, but then the sun comes, she finally gets away from it after she's up the tree. Because the sun comes up, it uses solar energy. So then it powers back up. She finally like manages to like shoot it a bunch of times and totally destroy it. But then it sputs out more tracking devices. And she is like, she's covered in these like blinking lights that are like lodged into her skin. And so she's just like saying goodbye to her loved ones over a walkie-talkie. She doesn't know that works.
That sounds like a great episode. Marks the second time that we've ended one of our episodes with a Black Mirror episode synopsis.
This has been Cargo Cult.
Love you guys so much.
See you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye. Those evil nature robots. They're programmed to destroy us. She's gotta be strong to fight them. So she's taking long.